Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure.
I think it's the second hour of another exciting episode.
Or all right, at least it's another... It's an episodic second hour.
Maybe it's just not... Maybe it's just a second hour instead of the exciting part because, you know...
It is exciting.
It's going to be... Exciting for somebody.
Well, I find it exciting because every time I open my mouth, I have the potential to be wrong.
I think it's all relative. It's that
yes,
old. It's
you
that,
are you are a relative of mine.
It's
right.
It's all. It's that joke about the snail and what it says while riding on the back of a turtle. Whee! To the snail that is quite exciting. Yes.
Anyway,
we are the snails, and we're like yeehaw, and everybody else that's listening is going, oh boy, these guys are boring.
So the telephone number is to call in here if you're in East Bell County, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. One of these days they might change those numbers and we'll be quoting along and talking along and totally not realize it. I hope they never do that.
Well, then we'll stop getting telephone calls.
So what's new?
No. One thing nice, if I say something that is completely inaccurate, that's a good way to find out if people are listening.
Yeah.
So I'm very... Anyway, it was interesting, the job report that came out and all of the positive and negative that that we heard about it last week. You can tell it was a slow week because there was a tremendous amount of discussion about the fact that the unemployment rates fell from 7.5 to 7.4 while we only created 166,000 jobs, as if 166,000 jobs, as if people... We're really excited about that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have some news that I think on the world of the political spectrum, it might be a pretty good thing, but it's completely, as far as I could see, I couldn't find a single headline in any major publication that said anything about it.
Well, let me finish this thing on the jobs report.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
It was interesting because on Wednesday, Automated Data Processing, which used to be Ross Perot's company, which has the highest percentage of any such organization in the United States when it comes to non-governmental jobs, came out with a report from last month, from July, stating that during the month of July, in the private sector, 200,000 jobs were added to the economy. Then, Friday, out comes the Bureau of Economic Analysis. Or was it the Labor Department? Labor Department, yes. Labor Department comes out and says 166,000 jobs were added to the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the difference? And the difference is, and there is a lot of interesting data in here, but it's not really different from what we've seen before. But it's still interesting. The reason is that if you look at what happened down in the grass, in the dirt, and so on, there are 44,000 fewer people working. We had a loss of 44,000 jobs on the government side.
Yeah.
And a gain of 200,000 jobs on the private side.
Seems like a repeating echo of the pattern that started as soon as the government started cutting jobs. Bless you.
Excuse me.
Yeah, the whole concept of sequester is meaning that a big chunk of our economy is going to be shrinking regardless of overall growth.
Well, and then there was another little number that came up that in the jobs report that the economists suddenly got very upset about.
What's that?
The number of people who are only working part-time.
Yeah.
Who would prefer full-time jobs. And guess what the largest...
Well, there was a number. I've got to remember the numbers. It was somewhere around 10 million jobs were added over the past 12 months, and about 7 million of them were part-time jobs.
Well, that's the way it looks. However, there was...
Those numbers may be completely off. And maybe putting an extra digit on there. But the percentages may be...
You're right. But here's the interesting point. Guess what... sector of the economy last month had the by far and away largest contribution to the part-time workers who wanted to work full-time.
Which one?
federal government.
Oh, you wanted me to guess. I forgot.
Year over year, 150,000 people as of July. There's 150,000 people who work for the federal government who said, we're part-time workers and we'd like to be full-time.
Yeah.
And that's called furlough.
Yep. That is exactly what's going on there.
On the other hand, this is interesting. Let me throw something else. In food service, there were 150,000 fewer people working part-time who wanted to work full-time.
Yeah. So let's address some of the headlines that came for this particular bit of news about part-time people. Because the numbers we just quoted showed a lot of part-time people now with not so many full-time jobs. We just explained part of that. Furlough going on in the government means that people that were full-time are now considered part-time. So those jobs exist as a part-time thing. The headline, let me see if I can find it here. Headline says, it's a great headline.
It is?
Have we become a nation of hamburger flippers?
That's what those federal part-time workers are doing.
So it's the Daily Ticker. It's being covered. It's on the main page at finance.yahoo.com. Yahoo's got a great place where news gathers. But I've seen that kind of headline everywhere. We've just debunked that. We've just said very clearly that these part-time jobs are in the government sector. Vast majority of them are in the government sector. Not only that, fewer part-time jobs in food services. So the headline, which is a question, and when you bring up to a journalist, why did you have a headline that suggests that we have a nation of hamburger flippers? And the journalist responds, I didn't suggest that. I was simply asking a question.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So the question is, have we become a nation of hamburger flippers? Which causes us to immediately say, of course, we're a hamburger flipping nation. Anyway, the subject that I wanted to address
Have we given the telephone number? Did I give the telephone numbers?
I gave the telephone numbers, good, but right. we can do it again.
773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And this is the Personal Wealth Coach now. Go ahead with your again.
All right. The end of last month, there was a shift in the Senate, the federal Senate. A major shift. Massive shift. A shift that...
Could we see it? Is it across the floor or something?
Well, we've seen the results.
Okay.
Harry Reid said publicly, I will not employ the nuclear option. Okay, the nuclear option in putting appointed people into jobs. So there's a bunch of people
The nuclear option is using simple majority.
Right. Nuclear option would be to make it so that filibusters are not possible for appointments made by the president. You can't filibuster them. You have to have an up or down vote.
No, you could filibuster, but the point is that...
A majority would get it through the filibuster.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a filibuster would say...
The other thing about this is, in order to filibuster, you had to get up and start talking.
Yes.
Which you don't now.
Right.
All you have to do is say, I'm going to filibuster, and it stops everything.
Yeah. So Harry Reid got up and very publicly said, I will not employ the nuclear option.
And I'm sure the Iranians, when they translated that...
They said, oh, that's
yes,
very good.
No problem.
All right. However, since he said that, this is kind of a major event, a whole series of people that have been appointed by the president have been reviewed by the Senate and approved.
Yes.
A very large number of them. It's moving forward. We're actually getting some movement in an area that actually should have had movement to begin with. One of the issues...
Well, there was also a little other thing to it in that they withdrew some National Labor Relations Board...
Exactly.
...appointees that had been stuck in there as recess appointments.
Right. So what we're seeing here is that there was cooperation in a very partisan area for the first time since midway through the Bush administration. This is something that has been a fight, and it's been getting worse and worse, and it's causing detriments to both sides of the aisle, in that the government needs to have people in charge of certain agencies, and those agencies cannot run without people in charge of them. So the,
no, they can.
Well, not very well. And so the abuses by the executive branch have been withdrawn, and cooperation has started by the Senate. And we have a caller on
1-866-597-1400, and you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. It's Chris from Georgetown.
Hello, Chris von Georgetown.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Welcome to the program.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So I heard you talking about a nation of hamburger flippers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you'll hate what I have to say because I might have to agree with you on some stuff. But
oh, no. We hate that already.
So,
can't
you know,
agree with us.
With the economy and everything else, is like, you know, I'm not going to worry what Obama and the rest of the idiots in Washington are doing. But I know in the Southwest, since I'm in the food industry and specifically selling to grocery stores like Whole Foods and Sprouts,
mm-hmm.
Whole Foods is expanding big time in the Southwest, and
right.
Sprouts. Both of these guys are major players, high-end food retailers that people
mm-hmm.
pay whole paychecks for their food. And so, to say, you know, the whole paycheck thing, and I understand the point, but you have to look where there's growth, and there is opportunity, and there is growth within these grocery stores. And Whole Foods and Sprouts pay their people well. They pay them very
yeah,
well.
And I, one of the, and so, I mentioned a moment ago, food service workers. In the last year, saw a decrease of 150,000 in the number of people who work part-time but said they wanted to work full-time. And since the total employment went up in that area, it's reasonable to assume that those part-time workers did get full-time employment in the food service industry.
And another thing addressing what you just said, Chris, during the recession, Whole Foods and the other organic extra expensive grocery stores slowed way down in their growth. They continued to grow, but they slowed way down because people didn't have a lot of extra income to go and buy a special kind of vegetable instead of just a vegetable.
Right.
We're seeing the other end of that. We're seeing expansion in those areas. We're seeing people have enough money that they want to go and buy. If they're going to buy a vegetable, they're going to get organic, or they're going to get fill in the blank. They're going
right.
to get the special kind that has extra vitamins or whatever in it.
Right. Well, and when Whole Foods and Sprouts expands and they open up the stores, it's not just the stores. You also have to see what happens with trucks, what happens with distribution centers,
mm-hmm.
what happens with a lot of other people. When they open up, there's other smaller businesses, such as like the business
right.
I work for, that are able to go in there and sell more product into these stores. So
it's the anchor theory
right. of like an HEB coming into a shopping center, right? It helps other small businesses.
It also helps something else. You mentioned the trucks and so on. What we've seen is that places like that are having a dramatic effect, oddly enough, on heavy manufacturing, which is why, oddly enough, and I do say this is oddly enough, the reason that our PMI, is so high in the United States right now. We have the fastest growing, as of July, the fastest growing manufacturing sector in the world.
Right.
Now, that's really unusual, and I hope you understand. What we're actually seeing is there are sectors or manufacturing sectors in the United States that are operating at full capacity, and they're having to build new facilities for manufacturing. And I think that's one of the most underreported items. The United States manufacturing output today is the highest it has ever been in history.
Now, let me come at that from another. And that comes directly from the fact that trucks are being needed to do things for organic places. So these places that are manufacturing huge diesel-powered things
right,
to go.
They're also making refrigerators and
right.
all kinds of things.
Right. On the other side of this. And if we're going to quote the good side, we'll quote the bad side. In 2007, there were 2 million more Americans employed in manufacturing than there are today.
Yep.
But our manufacturing output is higher than it has ever been. So
yeah,
the two sides...
I think it's a shift, too. There's shifts going on within the economy. There's stuff that's going away, that there's jobs are going away, and there's new ones popping up.
Right.
A lot of the grocery industry is getting very, very technical savvy
mm-hmm.
with shipping, very, very efficient. So
right.
you can ship stuff within a day or two from manufacturing warehouses. And HEB is probably the best example of this when it comes to smartness and how to distribution centers. Because Whole Foods and Sprouts don't have their own distribution center. They employ somebody else, like a UNFI and stuff like that.
Right.
H-E-B has its own distribution centers down so well that they can, I remember when I worked for them, that the bread would come hot off of the truck from Corpus Christi, made that day. So it's just a matter of they're getting very smart and very technical savvy and saving money in those certain areas. And that's where the growth is coming from. When Whole Foods gets and builds a new place, they get technically savvy with how to ship stuff correctly, how to ship it faster.
Right, and that's that is the incentive for the people that have lost their jobs in manufacturing. If right. There are not very many people in this area that were in manufacturing and lost their jobs, some people here, but not compared to other areas of the country. If those people that understand the process, they understand the manufacturing process, they know how long it takes to get from one end to the other of the line, go into a distribution center that is hiring people that have the technical skills and understand the manufacturing process to get it distributed in a way that is much more efficient than it used to be, that's the sort of thing that when you gear up to the new job, you get paid more for the thing that you already know because you're able to apply it in a new situation. That's the sort of thing that's the history of the United States. It's how we have been able to go from building or weaving by hand to weaving with water wheels to weaving with steam engines to now we don't weave anymore. We just put it in the computer and send it off to China and let them do it.
If you're weaving in your lane, you'll probably get a ticket. Anyway.
Yes, weaving in the lane is a ticketable offense.
There are things that are made in China, but also, I mean, like Sprouts is headquartered in Phoenix, but they have a DC in the Dallas area, and so does
Distribution Center.
Distribution Center, and there's another one that's in there in the Flower Mound area, and I think it does Nature's Best.
And it's
here. So there's like the areas in Dallas, the distribution centers are huge, and they're million square foot warehouses that are super, super, super efficient.
And super, super, super automated, too.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's Chris, to a point that I wanted to raise during the show. Looking at the jobs numbers and the statistics and carefully looking at through that subject today and over the week, really interesting thing came out. The Pew Research Center, pulling data from the census, came to an interesting conclusion, and it's very, very well-founded, and that's that 36% of the people between 18 and 31 are still living with their parents.
Right. Yep.
That's the highest it's ever been since they've been measuring it.
What does that say to...
There's a reason.
What does that say to the economy? What does that say to the...
It says something very important.
Yeah.
There's two groups of people they discovered who were in that condition. One group are people who just can't find a job and are just stuck. But there's a bigger group in there who have decided, whoa, I need to get an education. They're in financial straits. They went out to try to find a job out of high school, basically, and they figured out that they needed a better education. They have moved back home and are attending either a technical school or a community college. So we have this huge surge, by the way, in low-cost education enrollment, including online enrollment, aimed at specific technical skills.
Okay.
And we talked about the fact that the manufacturing industry is much bigger than it was, much bigger than it's ever been,
right,
with a lot fewer employees. And the whole point is, and I think you probably are seeing this, whereas having a strong back and the ability to move boxes around was the key things in those distribution centers before, today the key thing is being able to operate the computer systems.
Now, this statement, the thing about the people, the 18 to 21-year-olds living at home. 18 to 31-year-olds living at home with their parents. There's multiple ways of looking at that. We know a pretty good deal of data about these people. The vast majority of them are not stuck and unable to get jobs. The vast majority of them are going back to school and retooling and getting new skills. You can see it in debt for student loans going up over the time period since the recession started and till now. What does that mean? Because it's easy to say that as a headline, but one of the things that we do on a regular basis is, what does that mean? That's unusual. And once they do get good jobs, if they're doing this education, they will get good jobs. once they do, what's it going to mean for the real estate industry? What's it going to mean for the auto industry? What's it going to mean for the manufacturing of washing machines and of dishwashers and of refrigerators? Because all of these people do not wish to live with their parents. I can almost guarantee that.
What?
At some point when they have that paycheck coming in, they're going to move out. They're going to move out. They're going to buy washing machines and dishwashers. They're going to buy refrigerators. They're going to buy a house, which means that we have a pent-up demand. This is the same thing we were looking at 3 years ago when we were talking about cars, that people are saying, how did you guys know that cars were going to start going selling like hotcakes? And I said, I don't know why hotcakes and cars have anything to do with each other. What we're seeing, looking ahead in the next 3 years, expect to see housing starts kick back up. Expect to see manufacturing sales of washing machines and major appliances kick back up, because these people will not live with their parents forever. It's almost guaranteed. And they are moving forward with their lives.
But I have a funny feeling. Not a funny feeling. I kind of suspect they're not going to be buying houses. They're going to be moving into apartments.
To begin with, but that still means washing machines and,
yes,
and
absolutely,
refrigerators.
Absolutely.
And the upper end, the people that are in the apartments now are going to be moving into houses.
And there's a whole new kind of real estate company appearing out there.
So I have to say, I don't understand. I'm coming from a background where once I left my parents' house, I worked whatever I had to do to work to keep my rent and everything. I don't understand moving back. I've asked for my parents' help. They've helped me out, but I don't understand moving back into your parents' house at the age of, let's go within that range. I don't understand it.
As a male.
That's because you didn't live in Detroit.
That's because you didn't go through the Great Recession.
Maybe that's it.
You lived in Texas.
Wherever those segment is living, I don't understand, because I lived on the back of a professor's porch in college. I paid $100 in rent and walked to school, rode my bike where I needed to, and lived on rice, beans and rice. I'm like, I'm not moving back in with my parents. I'm a man. I can survive on plastic furniture.
You know, you're right.
I don't understand that.
Chris, you're getting old.
I know.
In my day, we didn't do that thing. We didn't do that back then. I walked uphill to school both ways.
No, really.
Snowing,
in reality, the other thing that's happening is they're deferring marriage to a much later point.
Marriage and children.
And as a result, what you have is, and we're going to see this, there was a time, and oddly enough, I lived in a backwater place when I was growing up, and there was
a big
ceremony at the end of the ninth grade where people graduated, and a lot of the kids that I went to school with at that point,
that was it,
did not go back to school after that. They went home and worked on the farm. And so what we've seen is, or they went out and got a job in the ninth grade.
Right.
They're 15 years old, 16 years old. I mean, that was the time they went out and got a job and were considered to be at the point where they needed to provide for themselves.
You are old.
And so what we've seen is that age gradually going up. And what happened is back in the late 20th century, full adulthood, socially, was at 25. And the survey, part of this article that I read, indicated that there was several surveys have indicated that among people of that age group, people are, on average, expect someone to live outside of their house after 28. In other words, it's okay to be living with your parents up till about 28. Now, and the reason is, very simply, in order to get, if you're entering the workforce today and you want to get a first-class job, you want to get a reasonable job, entry-level first-class job,
you've got to train for it.
You need a master's degree.
Well, not necessarily.
No, I mean first-class. First-class job. I'm not talking about...
You may be a little bit exaggerating there, but
no.
I know what you're saying.
When I graduated, when I went to school, I was the first member of our family, not my extended family, like cousins and so on, but as far as my ancestry was concerned, I was the first member of our family to get a bachelor's degree. And a bachelor's degree meant you stepped into a business at the top of the heap. They expected you to know things when you walked in the door. You were given a much higher pay scale than other people when you stepped into the door. And at that time, for example, when I joined the Army, because I had a bachelor's degree, I could be an officer. And in order to be an NCO, non-commissioned officer, a person either had to have a GED or a high school graduation. Now, today, if an officer wants to continue up through the ranks and do reasonably well early in that officer's career, they better have a master's degree. If a non-commissioned officer wants to do well, they need to have a bachelor's degree. Do you follow me?
I do, but it's longer.
We're spending more years in school.
But I think that's the maybe that's the point that people think when they get out of college that thinks they should get a certain standard of a job. And I've been on the other level. Well, I think you need to work first and prove yourself. Because to me, titles and education mean jack. When I hire somebody and I interview them, I'm like, okay, great, you got these positions, that's awesome. What have you done? Tell me specifically within your job what you did that you're value to the company, and you save the company money or you increase sales. Tell me specifically what you did, because a title means nothing. You could be there through attrition.
What I'm saying though is that the minimum standards for an awful lot of jobs today have been raised, so the kids wind up staying at home. We need to break for commercials, Chris.
Thank you for the call.
And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. And on the other side of commercials, if you'd like to give us a call, telephone numbers in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we'll be back after these important words from KTEM sponsors. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Telephone numbers in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And government construction spending at 6-year low.
Oh, big surprise there. Big surprise. It's like saying the government spending is down. Oh, really? You expect?
Let me tell you, a lot of people still don't believe that the government spending is down. You want to know a summary of what's going on in the economy is right there. Government spending at 6-year low. Next headline, Facebook closes above $38. That was its initial offering price.
Well, this is something. We said this back when Facebook was initially offered. We said that the underwriters of that sale had actually done their research. They had said this is what they expected to sell for. When the stock price dropped, it was based on a panic situation. I don't think that people understood what Facebook did when they bought that thing. I don't understand.
I use Facebook, and I still don't understand what it does. Well, all I know is I get invited to join Candy Crush on a regular basis and turn it down.
I just have blocked all invites for that.
I don't know how to do that.
The concept here is simple. Facebook has a lot of people that look at it, and they've got advertisements that run on Facebook. Okay, we've all seen those advertisements if we use Facebook. The question is, can they make a profit doing that based on their company? Yes, they can make money doing that. They make a profit. Well, how much profit? And that's the question. Right now, their price to earnings, let me pull this up. We're not recommending any individual stock, by the way.
Price-earnings ratio is a number.
It's a very large number.
Yes. But it's not something that I would want to purchase anyway.
Yeah.
But it's
the reason why is, well, the price-to-earnings ratio is 191.47, which means that it would take, if you bought a share today at $38.05.
Right.
It would take 191 years of current earnings to pay you back that $38.
If they gave you all the earnings.
Right. If they gave you all of the earnings, which they will not do.
They're not giving
dividends yet, which means those earnings are going back into the company. So it is obviously not a company that is valued based on what it owns or what it is earning. It is a company that's valued on the potential of what it might earn and the potential of what is watching it. And for that purpose, if someone is measuring potential, how do you even measure that? And I think that the underwriters did a pretty good job of measuring and saying, if they do well, if they wind up being a success story later in life, then they will be worth this much money. Okay. That being said, I look at Facebook and definitely am not a big fan of wanting to go out and purchase it. Just like I'm not a big fan of going out and purchasing Apple or any other individual security, for that matter.
At the other end of the spectrum, Berkshire Hathaway's earnings climbed 46%.
Uh-huh.
but the stock is up 31% from the beginning of the year. In other words, that's the difference, by the way, folks, between a value stock and a growth stock. People have often asked us about that. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, and for that matter, the S&P 500, are kind of dominated by large-cap growth stocks. And they're things like Facebook, some of which are at 119 earnings.
191
times earnings. Then you have the boring companies that own insurance companies and Geico.
Yeah.
That's the insurance company. Railroads. And just anything but exciting. I mean, how much does a railroad grow? You look out there and the tracks are there and you come back and they're still there.
It looks like they haven't added any new tracks anytime lately.
But you have the earnings of a company grow 46%. And yeah, the stock is up, but it's not outrageous. Now, of course, the problem is that one share of the stock costs $100,000+.
$176,500
per share, which means buying a round lot of those is a little
buy 100. I want to buy 100 shares of no, I don't. I don't. I cannot afford that.
Yeah, it says here. I don't know what you got. It says here $1,882 a share.
I'm looking at A shares, so you might be.
No, that was a year earlier. Okay.
Okay.
It's $2,763 a Class A share, up from. Wow. No, that's the earnings. That's just the earnings.
That's
the profits of $2,700 a share.
Earnings per share, not quarterly, but on an annualized basis, is $10,869.
What does it say the price-to-earnings ratio is?
The price-to-earnings ratio is 16.24. What does that mean? It means 16 years of earnings would pay back that. Now, looking at Berkshire Hathaway, it's not just valued based on its earnings or what it owns. It's valued on the concept that some old fellow that's running the place is going to keep making decisions that's going to cause a lot more earnings and a lot more ownership at low price.
And the issue is, and this is one of the things when we talk about investing, it's hard at this point in the economic cycle to convince people of this, but there's a reality here. The Standard & Poor's 500 stock index right now has risen to about 15 times projected earnings. That is a lot higher than it was at 11 when we were talking about that the stock market is really low. And at about 17 or 18, we start to get a little bit antsy about this.
So we're still below the point where we should be. But once we get up to 17 or 18, we're not going to be so up and down and so hopping up and down with excitement about the stock market as a whole. We'll still be able to see certain areas of the stock market that are good.
But there's an interesting point right here that was also in Barron's today that, I always like it when articles come out in Barron's that agree with me because they're obviously brilliant people writing them.
Of course.
The average emerging market stock, if you look at the emerging markets index, is in single digit
earnings per share. Which is where we look at it and we say that's really underpriced.
That's cheap. But that sector is down for the year. I mean, that asset class is down for the year. I think it's actually down for 12 months. Maybe it's up for 12 months. Interestingly enough,
no, it's down for 12 months.
It's down for 12 months.
2% down.
But we were at the end of last month is when it kind of hit a bottom, and people were really upset. Some people were really upset because that's in their portfolio. It's risen 6% since then.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that the secret to long-term investing, at least. Every study, every history, and every person in our firm all agree on this, is you buy stuff when people don't want them, and you hang on to them even more when people want them less because they've become more valuable. And that, in essence, is the secret of, if you go back and you look at the history of Warren Buffett, he buys industries, he buys whole companies, he has a tremendous advantage over the rest of us, but he buys companies when they are out of favor, when their stock is, quote, going down, and in many cases, after he buys them, they continue to go down. And after he buys shares in them, they continue to go down. Although at this point, I must admit, the mere fact that Warren Buffett bought shares in a company has a tendency to make the price per share go up in the market. He's guilty. He's almost guilty of insider trading every time he breathes. Because he knows what he's buying, and the mere fact that he buys it once it goes public, that once it's publicly announced that he bought shares in a company, he has this tremendous advantage. Once Warren Buffett buys a stock, it almost inevitably rises in value, whether or not there's been any change on anything else in the company, simply the mere fact that he bought it. As a matter of fact, his company, Berkshire Hathaway, is the only one that has an exception to the SEC's rule for a holding company like this of having to announce their holdings regularly, have to report their holdings publicly, everything they own. They don't do it. They're not required. When he's buying stock, he's in the process of buying it. He is not required to report it to the public. And the reason he's not required to report it to the public is it causes major market movements as soon as he starts buying something. He's almost as bad as the Federal Reserve. So, but there's a fundamental issue here at this point when we're likely to enter into some unhappiness going forward that people don't appreciate, and that is the criticality of buying low. People would much rather own and buy what's up and what's going up.
Yeah, and that's the opposite of what we all know. I mean, no one says buy high and sell low. It's the other way around. They say buy low and sell high.
No, I have had people say exactly that to me in my office.
They just miss it. Oh, man.
No, they really said, well, I want to buy what's up.
Right.
And as soon as it goes down, I want out of it because I don't want to be anything that goes down.
We just tend to do that as humans. We don't want to be in the thing that's going down, and that's the opposite of what if Warren Buffett, we've been talking about him, if he operated the way most people that I talk to operate with their investments, he would not be paid the large amounts of money that he's paid. He would not be considered to be brilliant. I mean, the concept that we're talking about is not brilliant. It really isn't. It's just really hard to do. Everyone can understand the concept. Doing the concept is difficult.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And it is, it's one of those things. Now, we're going to break for commercials, but I want to bring our kind of theme for this show back around again to what we were talking about and how important it is. If you know somebody,
how did we get a theme?
If you know somebody that's getting an education, there's several crises going around the country about people who have a lot of student debts and no jobs.
Right.
And the reason was they got educations. They borrowed the money to get an education in something where there just aren't jobs available. The idea, and it links right in with this issue that 36% of people between 18 and 31 are still living with their parents. The issue is we're retraining, we are reorienting in our society. That's why unemployment is up, even though manufacturing is up too. They normally go in opposite directions, and that's why a lot of things are going on in the economy. We've had a major shift in the economy technologically. It's been going on since 2000, but it's coming home to roost now where you have robots and computers building cars, and if you have...
Boy, that sounds like science fiction.
It is. We're living in a science fiction movie. I've told you that ever since you were a kid. I come over the hill, Nolanville Hill, looking down at the Killeen area, and I said, it looks like something out of a science fiction movie, because it does to me. But the point is that if you know somebody that's going to school or if you know somebody that is in need of work, the key here is to have a technological skill that is necessary in our environment. And this is, for whatever it's worth, the second industrial revolution within a century. The first one occurred just prior to the Great Depression,
right,
during the Great Depression. And we had
1920s and 30s.
We had the equivalent of that that's happening right now. Historically, we should be in a depression right now, coasting towards a war.
Yeah.
But we missed it.
I can lay that directly. I'm going to make a lot of enemies by saying this, but I have a lot of respect for this man. Ben Bernanke did a fantastic job at the tiller going through the Great Recession. We could have very easily had a Great Depression that would have ended in a massive world war.
And
that's historically what we should have done.
We were all set up for it. And the equivalent of Nazis, basically, had we done the same policies we did in the late 1920s and early 1930s, the players in the game would have changed a little bit, but not much. We would have
Putin.
Russia. It'd be Russia headed by Putin, playing the role of the Germans headed by Hitler.
And I realize that was World War II, not World War One, but the scenario would have been different there.
And in the role of the Japanese empire expanding and attacking the United States, you would have had China.
China, exactly.
And we would have, basically history would have repeated itself. Fortunately, somebody remembered the past and headed it off.
Both World War II and World War One were led into. The Japanese considered that we had started the war with them by putting trade embargoes in place. And tariffs, massive tariffs. So the Japanese thought we had fired the first shot in the war when Pearl Harbor happened. Now, we look at that and we say that there's no way you can think that. This is war. That's trade. Going back to World War One, exactly the same thing happened. We imposed the Schmoot-Hawley Act to put tariffs on everything so that we could protect American jobs. And the end result was that we put the rest of the world into a nosedive that led to a war and later to a man coming to power to take them out of the Depression. That was Hitler, Stalin in the Soviet Union, and FDR here. The massive amounts of power that were centralized into one person in each of these major countries came because of trade issues, and we have missed that. We have very consciously, on the part of many people, that, you know, I would almost put this in the realm of a miracle, in that as much as we don't do well together in the government, as much fighting and wrangling and arm wrestling and other forms of measurements that are very egocentric, we were still able to make it through this Great Recession without shooting ourselves in the foot repeatedly. We did some things that may hurt us. We did some things that are really good for us, but we didn't do the major, major bad things that we've done in the past.
The key today is to recognize that things are changing and to recognize that if a person does not have, Chris was talking about experience, and that's certainly true. If you have technological experience or technological skills, or technological education, you'll tend to do very well. If you don't, if your expertise is in running a power tool and attaching fenders in Detroit, you got a serious problem. We got a break for commercials.
Change the scope of what you're doing.
And by the way, that also affects the way we invest. We need to look at the macro economy and try to get ahead of it and position ourselves so that a few years from now, what we're investing in will do very, very well. Although we do have a tendency to get very short-sighted.
Yes, everybody does.
And we'll be back on the other side of these commercials with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Telephone numbers in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. Only about 3.5 minutes left in the episode, however.
In this Saturday, August the 3rd. You notice, I noticed whenever we get in here, the day of the week is always the same on the computer.
We only ever see Saturday. This is kind of funny, and it has to do with that whole placebo thing. We tend to look for patterns. And that statement of every time we come into the studio, it says Saturday on the screen. The screen is just broken there.
Could be.
Way our brains tend to work. Every time I go in there, it's Saturday. And there's something about that.
Kind of the summary of what's going on in the country today. We didn't even mention the fact that the GDP, the initial estimate of the gross domestic product of the United States, which will be changed at least three more times.
Yes. At least three more times.
We're talking about the second quarter coming in at an estimated 1.7% annualized growth rate. That's a mouthful. Which was considerably higher than a lot of people thought. A lot of economists were thinking we were going to have a negative growth rate. I love that. A minus number in the second quarter. What happened is the consumer spending picked up. It picked up at the upper end. In other words, as Chris mentioned a little earlier, places like Whole Foods and things like that with relatively expensive items was where a lot of the buying took place. Meanwhile, employment has continued along. We're averaging 200,000 a month over the last year or so, which we only need about 144,000 to 150,000 per month to hold our own. So we are, the United States economy is in a gradual recovery. The reason that the gross domestic product is not rising considerably faster, we got two very good reasons. One, we're still recovering. We're still rehiring people who got laid off, even though our GDP is up, our manufacturing is up.
But
we've done a lot of job cutting in to make ourselves more efficient.
But the biggest single thing that we can look at, measurable thing, is somewhere between 1% and 1.5% of our GDP, not growth, things that did not happen, comes directly from cutting
right.
and spending in the federal government.
And what we've got is a long, slow recovery here. And the long, slow recovery is because we went to excesses over the past probably 20 or 30 years. And we're having to pay those back down again. But the interesting thing is we're doing a better job than anybody else on the planet of doing that.
Yes, we are.
So even in a not particularly exciting time, we are investing back into ourselves, this big education stuff that's going on.
It's a big deal.
The manufacturing, we are investing back into our country much faster than anyone else in the world. And I'm really optimistic in the long term for the United States.
That's it for us this week. If you'd like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting locally at 947-1111 or toll-free 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. Or you can email us, jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com, or go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com.
And until next week, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
Apple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood. Proud to broadcast to the largest military post in the free world. News Radio 1400 KTEM.